10 years ago, could we have imagined that Iowa would have marriage equality? I think this is taking on an air of inevitability. People have stopped hating us, but they're not yet ready to celebrate us.
If you think that there's nothing wrong with two men marrying each other, why is it you need the entire world to constantly affirm you?
I haven't heard a sermon on justification by faith in 7 years, heterodox or orthodox, and so who cares? Why are we studying these things if no one's going to preach them? I've heard so many sermons on anything but the gospel.
Of course, Arlen Specter decided to depart the GOP. Your thoughts, Congressman Shimkus?
When you will jettison your values for personal power in the state office, he's probably better off than the other party.
I imagine that if someone goes back January 2010 and reviews the first year of President Obama's administration, one of the biggest stories they're going to be talking about is the decision that he's likely to make here before the end of the summer with the retirement of David Souter from the Supreme Court. Who will President Obama nominate? Now, the who is an important question, but one that is left to the president for the time being. Who will President Obama's nominee replace? Who was David Souter on the court, and what will his legacy be? We're going to talk a little bit about that with Ed Meese here in the first few minutes of this hour of Issues, Etc. We'll also talk same-sex marriage and the law with the former attorney general during the Reagan administration. Greetings and welcome to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. It's Wednesday afternoon, the 13th of May. Our call-in number for the next hour, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Our in-studio email address is talkback@issuesetc.org. After our conversation with Ed Meese, we'll spend the rest of today's show talking with Dr. Ron Rhodes about the creation-evolution debate and what you need to know about it. Ed Meese is a regular guest. He served for more than 3 years as U.S. Attorney General during the Reagan administration. He holds the Ronald Reagan Chair in Public Policy for the Heritage Foundation, and he serves as a Distinguished Visiting Fellow for the Hoover Institute. Ed, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Thank you. It's good to be with you and your listeners.
Your general thoughts on Justice David Souter's time on the Supreme Court?
Well, Justice Souter has, unfortunately, not lived up to what the first President Bush had in mind. He felt that he was nominating a justice and later appointing a justice who would be faithful to the Constitution in all matters. And Justice Souter, while he was on many occasions, did fulfill that hope, unfortunately, on a number of occasions, joined the what you might call the activist or the branch of the court essentially substitutes their own personal biases, policy preferences, and political ideas for what the Constitution and the laws passed by the Supreme Court actually say. So I think in some cases he was unfortunately a disappointment to the president that appointed him.
What's been big, specifically, your biggest disappointment with Justice Souter's time there?
Well, I think it was many of the cases, those cases, for example, where the court usurped the authority of the president and the Congress in matters pertaining to the war against terrorists. There were a number of other issues, some relating to the issues concerning abortion and also a number of issues relating to religious liberty.
How would you characterize the current makeup of the Supreme Court minus Justice Souter?
Well, it's hard to exclude him because the court is, in some senses, kind of equally balanced in many ways between justices that are usually faithful to the Constitution and others and other cases where justices substitute their own ideas have a more personally oriented view rather than a constitutional view. Without Justice Souter, obviously, the number of justices who are substitute their own views is less, but it would be anticipated that it would not be unlikely that that President Obama would appoint someone, again, who is not constitutionally oriented. I say that because of what he has talked about. On some occasions, he has talked about appointing someone who will be true to the law. But on other occasions, he said he wanted to appoint someone who has, quote, empathy, unquote, or who understands what it is to be a homeless person or a homosexual or a elderly person, things like that, which, of course, the status of the individual should have no bearing on how a judge decides a case. It should be judged on the basis of what the law provides.
Some have argued, Ed, that that subsequent appointments to the Supreme Court after Souter, in some sense, pushed Souter farther to the left on the court than he may have been if the subsequent appointments hadn't been as conservative. What do you think of that theory?
Well, I don't think that the appointments following Souter were necessarily conservative in a political sense. I think instead that they were justices such as Justice Roberts and Justice Alito. They were justices who believed in adhering to the Constitution. I don't think that they were political at all in their orientation, so I don't think I would agree with that assessment.
Do you expect Republicans in the Senate to engage in a fierce battle against President Obama's nominee for Souter's place?
Well, I wouldn't say that they would be engaged in a fierce battle. For example, I certainly don't expect them to do what the Democratic Party did in 1986 or excuse me, in 87, when they had this terrible, disgraceful battle against Judge Bork, one of the finest persons and most qualified persons ever nominated for the Supreme Court. On the other hand, I would hope that the members of the Senate Judiciary Committee would question very carefully any nominee by President Obama, particularly in view of what President Obama has said about his qualifications, and make sure that whoever is going to be nominated does, in fact, qualify, quite frankly, as a person who will be faithful to the Constitution.
Why do you think so many presidents end up disappointed with their Supreme Court nominees?
I don't know. I think in some cases, I suspect it's because Supreme Court justices can't come back here to Washington, D.C. They have been on they are on the court for a while. Often at the start, their opinions, at least those of presidents like President Reagan, President George W. Bush, President George H.W. Bush, they are often follow the Constitution carefully in their opinions at the start. And then after a while, it seems that some of them at least kind of forget about that. Maybe it's because of the constant pressure from left-leaning newspapers, from special interest groups in Washington, D.C., a lot of people in the legal field who are of a very liberal bent or of anti-constitutional bent, a lot of groups that don't agree with religious liberty, things such as that, and perhaps this has an effect of wearing them down over a period of time. But that's why you need someone who is staunch, who is firm in their beliefs and has a firm foundation of commitment to the Constitution.
Some suggest that President Obama needs to look at the demographics of the court and say, put in another woman because we need more women on the court, or put in another minority because we need more minorities on the court. What do you make of that kind of calculus for a Supreme Court nominee?
Well, I think this would be an accurate way of depicting it if it was a policymaking body, so that you would have various segments of society represented. But the court is not a policymaking body. The court is an adjudication body, that is, a body of judges who apply the law. And therefore, I think this idea of trying to come up with some artificial idea of diversity on the court is false. It is not a good idea. What you want are 9 good lawyers, that is, people who understand the law and who are faithful to the Constitution. And individual personal characteristics, I think, really should not be a factor.
Where do you think the court stands right now on issues like abortion and gay marriage?
Well, I would say that in the case of abortion, right now, I think that the court is pretty evenly divided. For example, I think on certain issues like partial birth abortion, they have ruled on the side that is consistent with the Constitution. On the other hand, they have not seen fit to overturn what has been one of the worst decisions in history, that is the Roe against Wade decision, which was made up out of whole cloth. There was nothing in the Constitution at all that would authorize the court to make abortion a constitutional right. And yet a court did that, and courts since that time have upheld that concept. And so I think that's where the court stands now, unfortunately on the wrong side of that issue from a constitutional standpoint. In terms of homosexual marriage, there has been no basis really in the law anywhere for any of these courts in the states to find that homosexual marriage is a proper constitutional decision. This court, the Supreme Court of the United States, has not ruled on that. I would hope that they would uphold what is the dominant position in most states and not do anything that would interfere with states holding that marriage consists of one man and one woman.
Ed Meese is our guest. He served for more than 3 years as U.S. Attorney General during the Reagan administration. He holds the Ronald Reagan Chair in Public Policy for the Heritage Foundation and serves as Distinguished Visiting Fellow for the Hoover Institute. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Ed Meese. We'll be talking a bit about same-sex marriage and the law. How do we stem the tide of victories on same-sex marriage nationwide, state by state? A little bit later, in just a few minutes after the break, Dr. Ron Rhodes will be joining us after we conclude our conversation with Ed Meese. We'll talk about creation, evolution, the debate between the two, and what you need to know. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's Wednesday afternoon, May the 13th. You're listening to Issues Etc. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Our guest, former U.S. Attorney General Ed Meese. Ed, what can be done to stem the tide of what appears to be a lot of recent victories in same-sex marriage?
Well, there have been a few victories, but remember, they get all the publicity. Nobody's paying much attention to the fact that the overwhelming number of states and the overwhelming percentage of the population don't believe in perverting the institution of marriage. And so I think that what is happening is you have a very militant, bullying, very small minority that is disproportionately trying to use their influence and using all kinds of tricks and all kinds of really, in many cases, like in California, nothing more than thuggery against those who are in favor of traditional marriage. And so it is a small minority that is trying to tear down what is obviously the majority opinion, and not only the majority opinion, but the tradition that has permeated literally all civilizations throughout history.
You're a Californian, Ed. How do you think the California Supreme Court is going to go on Prop 8?
Well, it depends. If they follow the law, they will uphold Proposition 8. If they follow the basic foundation of our democratic republic and the state of California and its constitution, they will uphold Proposition 8. Unfortunately, they kind of took the law into their own hands and, in my opinion, totally illegally upheld the idea of homosexual marriage prior to the vote on Proposition 8. They were wrong then. There was clearly no basis in the California Constitution to do that. It was a 4-3 decision. I would certainly hope that they would not compound that decision, exacerbate that decision, by going against the will of the overwhelming majority of the people of California on this issue.
Is this nationwide going to eventually come to a constitutional amendment in favor of traditional marriage?
Well, it may be that that will have to happen. Right now, we have a law, a federal law passed by Congress, that indicates that states, which normally have most of the responsibility for family matters, including marriage, that if states should violate the concept of traditional marriage, that doesn't have to be recognized in other states. So that leaves this matter up to the individual states. If, on the other hand, that federal law were found by the Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court, to be unconstitutional, then I think you would have to have a constitutional amendment to the U.S. Constitution in order to correct the situation.
Then specifically, what should social conservatives do in the meantime to uphold traditional marriage, in your opinion?
Well, I wouldn't just limit it to social conservatives. I would limit it to all people who believe in the traditional values of our culture, all people who believe in right and wrong, certainly people who are Bible-believing people, and that is that they should make every effort to make sure that their legislators understand that they want to preserve the tradition of marriage in this country, and likewise they make this known also quite publicly. I'd like to see ministers particularly speak out on this so that that courts likewise, and unfortunately some courts like to think that they should bow to public opinion. Well, it's important that they understand what, if they feel that way, what public opinion really is.
Ed Meese served more than 3 years as U.S. Attorney General during the Reagan administration. He holds the Ronald Reagan Chair in Public Policy for the Heritage Foundation and serves as Distinguished Visiting Fellow for the Hoover Institute. Ed, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. It's always good to be with you.